When the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, I drew him out of the water. And we draw our reading to a close there at verse 10, this chapter, in God's own word. Well, in the last message, the opening message, book of Exodus, there are only two main points. First of all, we considered the great blessing that was being experienced by the people of God in Egypt, blessing upon their family life. On the other hand, then we saw great oppression at the hands of Pharaoh. Once more this evening, there are two main points. For the theme is this: a great deliverance from great danger. So I'll focus your attention upon, first of all, the great danger, and then secondly, the great deliverance. And children here this evening, and young people, this is a favourite story in children's Bibles. I think myself, even though it's a very long, long, long time ago since I was a child, I think I can remember liking this story. Who wouldn't like such a story? The story of a helpless little baby being rescued from the waters of the Nile and ending up in a royal palace. It is a tremendously moving and powerful story in and of itself. But as we'll see, it also contains some very encouraging truths about the sovereignty and the providence of the Lord in whom we trust. Let's begin then by looking first of all at this baby who was in great danger. He was in great danger. Wasn't a good time for a baby boy to be born in a Hebrew household. You remember the context, don't you? Pharaoh had decided that he needed to put down the people of Israel, for he saw them as a threat to him. An example of the hostility, underlying hostility, of the seed of the serpent against the seed of the woman. Hostility toward the covenant, chosen people of God. And you remember how he, first of all, subjected them to forced labor, but they still kept on increasing in number. Then how he ordered the Hebrew midwives to kill all the Hebrew baby boys that were born, but they disobeyed that decree out of fear of the Lord. But then you remember, and here's the verse before you at the end of chapter 1. Do you remember how chapter 1 drew to a conclusion on this very ominous note? Then Pharaoh gave this order to all his people. Every Hebrew boy that is born, you must throw into the Nile, but let every girl live. Exodus 1 verse 22. So you'd agree, this was not a good time for a baby boy such as Moses to be born into the world, but a time when such a baby would be in the greatest of danger. Every possibility and every likelihood that the Egyptians would get their hands on this baby and drown him in the waters of the Nile. A baby in great danger. But see also here in this opening part, a baby hidden for 3 months. A baby hidden for 3 months. The background to Moses' birth is given here. It's perhaps significant, as many commentators suggest, that he was born into the tribe of Levi. There may be a hint even in itself that just as the tribe of Levi were going to later be called upon to perform important service in the tabernacle for the Lord, so this child, born of a Hebrew father, or of a Levi father and of a Levite mother, God has something special in store for him. There may well be even a hint in that fact. However, the significant thing here is that the mother, as is emphasized in the Exodus account, though in Hebrews it's referred to the parents, that the baby is hidden in defiance of the decree. They're not going to allow this baby to be drowned at Pharaoh's command. Why was that? Well, light is cast upon this by a very important verse in the book of Hebrews. You know, in the book of Hebrews, in chapter 11, I'm sure you're aware, there's a whole list of the heroes and the heroines of the Christian faith. Those who had such great faith in the Lord. We think of Abraham mentioned, many others mentioned in that chapter. Maybe you don't always pick this one out as an example of great faith in the Lord. But it is identified as great faith on the part of the parents. That because they saw that this was no ordinary child, they had some special sense that this was no ordinary child. And because they had faith in the Lord, they defied the king's order. An example of faith. Earlier on, we saw, didn't we, in the last chapter, how it was out of the fear of God that the Hebrew midwives did not carry out Pharaoh's order, out of reverence for the Lord. Here in this instance, what is identified as lying behind this defiance of Pharaoh's order is faith in the Lord. Both are compatible. Both go together, don't they? Reverence for the Lord and faith in the Lord go hand in hand. So just as the Hebrew midwives defied Pharaoh out of reverence for the Lord, so the parents of Moses defy Pharaoh out of faith in the Lord. May we manifest both these things. Perhaps you will not have to face, it's very possible we might have to face, you may not have to face a royal decree or a governmental decree to do something that is obviously wrong. But what about the force of opinion that puts such pressure nowadays, particularly on young people, but in fact on us all, to follow the ways of the world? Or it will be said to you, you are old-fashioned, you're out of step, you're out of date, you're no fun. Come on, won't you join with us, for everyone else is going this way. Won't reverence for the Lord's will and faith and trust and reliance upon the Lord, won't that enable you? Let that enable you to stand firm and to defy the pressures, the intense pressures of this world. Just as here, the faith possessed by Moses' parents enabled them to defy even the order of the mighty Pharaoh of Egypt. A baby in great danger, a baby hidden for 3 months because of his parents' faith, they saw that he was no ordinary child, and they did not fear the king's decree. And therefore also, a baby placed in an ark on the bank of the Nile. What do we make of this? 3 months, they were able to hide the baby in the home. Baby Moses was growing stronger, his voice growing louder probably. Didn't feel they could hide him any longer in the home. Where were they going to hide him? What possible place could he be safe? Where could safety be found? Well, it's unusual, isn't it? Try to put yourself in this position. I know it's not easy to transfer yourself back into this position. But would you have thought of doing this? Would you have thought of placing the baby in a basket, or the literal Hebrew is an ark, a papyrus ark, in the River Nile, and hope that somehow or other he might be rescued and delivered and saved from the danger he was in? Commentators point out that the Hebrew word used here, which is translated normally as papyrus basket, should literally be translated papyrus ark. And many of them see a significance in this. I'm a bit reluctant at times to place too much emphasis on similarity of language. But let's remember that the author of Genesis is the same as the author of Exodus. And there would appear to be a deliberate similarity of language here. Remember what the ark was used for earlier in Genesis 7 verse 1. The Lord said to Noah, "Go into the ark, you and all your family." And that ark was covered with pitch, significantly as well. And here we have similarities, don't we? For here the baby Moses is placed in a one-person ark, not a big ark to accommodate Noah and his family and all the animals. A one-child ark even. And it's covered with pitch as well. That there is a thematic parallel there. And tend to highlight that both Noah and Moses, while they had to undergo trials in the water, both of them were delivered from the water. Both of them were delivered from the water. And then they in turn, Noah and later on Moses, were used by God to be deliverers of his chosen people, his remnant. So some see a significance in that. There may well be a deliberate parallel. However, it is unusual, isn't it? What do you make of it? What do you make of the mother's plan? Was it a case of, as it were, nothing ventured, nothing gained? Got to do something. Can't keep the baby in the house any longer. Here's one possibility. Here's a desperate measure. Ecclesiastes 11:1, cast your bread upon the waters, for after many days you will find it again, or it will return to you again. Someone not paralyzed into inactivity, but coming with a plan that may work, no matter how unusual it may appear to be. And certainly, it wasn't an act of blind desperation in the sense that there was a wise procedure adopted, wasn't there, to keep an eye on this baby in the midst of the reeds on the banks of the river. The sister was left to watch from a distance. So there's a careful plan here. It's not just an emergency or panic measure. It is a worked out plan. Some would even go as far as to say this, though I'd be reluctant to go this far, but some commentators would speculate that the mother knew, the parents knew, that the princess of Egypt, the daughter of Pharaoh, and her attendants normally went to bathe down here in this particular place by the banks of the Nile. And therefore that they had some good grounds for believing that just possibly this princess might discover the baby and show kindness to him. But there's nothing said about that in the text. It's maybe going too far to speculate that the mother and the father had this expectation or this hope. Nevertheless, are they not still acting in faith? That just as they hid the baby in the home in defiance of the king's order through faith in the Lord, here likewise, they cannot foresee all that will happen and how it will work out, that they have some expectation, some hope, that somehow or other all will turn out well for this little baby, whom they see as no ordinary child. Parallel came to mind of the case of the men who are thrown into the fiery furnace. Remember that? Because of their loyalty to the Lord and their refusal to worship idols. As recorded in the book of Daniel, that they could not be certain that they would be delivered. They had an expectation or a hope that the Lord could deliver them. But listen to what they say in Daniel 3, 17, 18. If we are thrown into the fiery furnace, the God we trust in is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O King. But even if he does not, we want you to know, O King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. That there was a great level of expectation on the part of these men. The Lord was able to rescue them. But even if he didn't, in faith, they would not bow the knee to an idol. But can it be entirely certain, the exact mindset of the parents here? It's interesting the phrase, isn't it, in verse 4. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. What could have happened to him? Well, many bad things could have happened to him. Couldn't it? Couldn't they? I imagine, I'm not an expert in the life around the banks of the Nile, especially in ancient world, but there could have been the possibility, one would think of a crocodile, a hungry crocodile, making a meal of this little baby. Or, more likely, that the baby would be found by an Egyptian who would be utterly unsympathetic to a Hebrew baby and would only go about and take the baby out of the basket and drown him, after all, in the River Nile. His sister stood at a distance to see what would happen to him. But there is faith here at work, even though they cannot be sure of the exact outcome of what will happen. The parents are acting in faith and reliance upon the Lord to in some way bring about the deliverance of this child whom the Lord has convinced them is no ordinary child. And often in life, dear friends, as we, the people, the men and women of faith, go about our daily work and face our daily challenges, there are many, many things and situations that you and I will be in and will not be able to see exactly what may happen. Haven't you found that? But whatever may happen, we know we are in the hands of a sovereign God who does work all things out for his own glory, to fulfill his own purposes. The first thing we see here then is great danger, but great faith in the midst of this danger. And then the second thing you see here is, of course, that there was indeed a great deliverance brought about by the Lord. I want to highlight a few aspects of this, four in fact. The first one is this: the princess who saw the baby. We might pass over this, but it is significant that she spotted the ark, didn't she? She spotted the basket among the reeds. It might have been the case that she didn't spot it, or it might have been the case that she did spot it, but didn't really have any curiosity about it. Maybe she could have been preoccupied with her princess's hair, or if her toenails were clean, having bathed in a river. She may have been chatting away to her servant maids and not paid any attention. But so it works out in the providence of God that she sees, doesn't she? She does see this basket among the reeds. And more than that, she sends one of her maids to see what is in it. Something small, but highly significant, nevertheless. Secondly, not only that, the princess who felt sorry, as the modern translation has it, felt sorry for the baby. Once more, it could have been the case, could it not, that this Egyptian princess could have looked at this baby, saw it was a Hebrew child, remembered her father's command and said, "Let's drown the baby. That's what my father has decreed. These Hebrews are a danger and a nuisance. Here's a Hebrew baby boy. Let's do what my father wants to be done with this child. Let's have him drowned in the waters of the Nile." That could have been the case. But not so in the providence of God. The baby is crying. Well, crying baby. Well, I remember times that crying babies didn't exactly fill me with compassion. In the middle of the night, I wasn't used to it. You know, an old boy of 35 who had, actually older than that, the time the baby was born, enjoyed good night's sleep all his life. Babies crying in the middle of the night mightn't always fill you with pity and compassion. But it so happened that this is not the middle of the night, and this baby is crying, and you see the response from this lady's heart. She felt sorry for him. The Hebrew word here has the idea of sparing someone out of pity or compassion.
Let me mention two places where the same phrase is found to give you an idea of its meaning. 2 Chronicles chapter 36 and verse 15, speaking of the Lord's pity and compassion for his people. It says, "The Lord, the God of their fathers, sent word to you again and again through his messengers, because he had pity on his people and on his dwelling place." The Lord, out of pity for his people, sent messengers and messengers and messengers to his people. It's the same phrase that he had pity on. Or another instance of it is in Malachi 3 and verse 17. Again referring to the Lord's pity. It says toward his people, "I will spare them, just as in compassion a man spares his son who serves him." A father's compassion for his son. The same word, the same phrase. And so here this Hebrew prince, or this Egyptian princess, rather than despising this child as a Hebrew, or rather than simply leaving him be to whatever might happen to him, was moved with pity for him. Again, we see the providential hand of God at work here in such an emotion, in such a response. But more than that, there's more. Don't we see the providential hand of God as well in the fact that this is the princess who agreed to the sister's suggestion? What was the sister's suggestion? Well, as is the case often in royal families, these aren't expected to look after the babies themselves. They'll get a servant to do that. And here the sister comes along at just this moment, and she very readily says, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women," verse 7, "to nurse the baby for you?" Now once more, the princess could have said, "Oh no, I'll get one of my own Egyptians to do this. Why should I entrust him to a Hebrew woman?" But not so. She is moved and she is led to accept this suggestion. And remarkably, of course, then, in the providence of God, who looks after the baby Moses during the early formative years of his life, those very early years? His own mother. And with great irony almost, the word of God says she's even getting paid for it. Doesn't he say that? "And I'll pay for it. I'll pay her for it. I will pay you." So again, we see God's favour here. And this is important too, that the baby Moses should be brought up in his very earliest years by his own mother. Why is it important, do you think? Well, because, number one, it would have enabled him to identify with his own people. And number two, through his mother's and father's influence and his family's influence, he would become aware of the true and living God. Or in the court of Egypt, if he'd been just brought up all the time in the court of Egypt, he would not have probably heard much at all, if anything, of the true and living God. But here, as a very young child, Moses is associating with the covenant people of God and being taught undoubtedly about the true Lord, so important for the future. So the princess, who first of all saw the baby, the princess who felt sorry for the baby, the princess who was led to agree to the sister's suggestion. One more thing that assured really the security of Moses. For then, when he came of a bit older, we're told that the princess brought him up as her own son. And she gave him the significant name, which means, or sounds like, "drawn out. I drew him out of the water," so she called him Moses. But it's significant here, isn't it? For the future, for what's going to happen down the line, that Moses becomes familiar with the ways of Pharaoh's court. The New Testament tells us that he's brought up in the wisdom of the Egyptians. He's been equipped and prepared for later leadership role. He not only has an acquaintance to his mother in his earliest years, his father, with the ways of God's people, but he's also safe and secure in the royal palace and being prepared, undoubtedly,
for future leadership of the people of God. Don't we see the providence of God at work here in relatively unspectacular ways, really? Now, very often, and we'll see this later in the book of Exodus and throughout the Bible, God does operate in miraculous ways, doesn't he, on behalf of his people? Later on, there'll be that wonderful spectacle and miraculous event of the Sea of Reeds, or the Red Sea, being parted so miraculously to allow the people of God to walk through on dry land and escape from their oppressors. And then the God equally closes the waters upon the Egyptian armies. Or indeed how all those signs and wonders are performed to make Pharaoh bow the knee to God's command to let his people go. But here, there's nothing really miraculous, is there? Somebody has called this the quiet providence of God, working through ordinary events and ordinary happenings to ensure deliverance for his servant and the fulfillment of his plans and purposes through Moses. Nothing that extraordinary, really, in the princess seeing the baby. Nothing that extraordinary, really, in the princess feeling sorry for the baby. By the common grace of God, people will feel sorry for crying babies, even a heathen princess. Nothing that extraordinary, in a way, about her agreeing to the sister's suggestion. Here's immediate solution to the need. And nothing at all extraordinary that the princess should really, as it were, adopt this child and bring her up as her own son. Can't you think, and can't I think, of how God has worked in our lives? Not necessarily in dramatic and spectacular ways, but in ways that have been so vital to the shaping and formation of our Christian experience. To give an example from my own experience, it so happened that when I was growing up in the congregation of Convoy, it was a bigger congregation in those days, there were quite a number of very committed, enthusiastic young people my age. We had a very vibrant Covenanter Youth, or CYPU it was called then. I was given the opportunity to lead the youth meetings in the congregation. And without that, because I was an extremely shy fellow, without that I probably would never, ever have had the courage to stand up and speak before people. But it was in the preparation and the plan of God those opportunities should be set before me. Maybe you have been at some time in your life in a tremendous quandary and confusion, in some difficulty not knowing what way to turn. And there has been no outstanding miracle the Lord could do that. But someone has come alongside you with the right advice and the right way forward at just the right time that has enabled you to be delivered from that trouble and quandary and difficulty that you find yourself in. Let us not underestimate how God works quietly, ordinarily and unspectacularly to guide and direct, preserve and protect his people and his servants. But there is another aspect to this work of providence as well here, God's work of providence. Because when you think about it in a way, there is an unlikely agent used here to deliver his servant Moses, isn't there? Who could have predicted? Could you have predicted if you were in this situation? Really, could you have predicted that it would be an Egyptian princess, one of the very daughters of Pharaoh herself, who would frustrate Pharaoh's decree in this situation? God often does use the most unlikely of agents to bring about his plans and purposes. Think of one other example. Cyrus, the Persian king. How were God's people going to be brought back, as God had promised, from slavery in Babylon? Well, amazingly, the Lord worked in the heart of the Persian king to direct that the people of Israel should be allowed to return to Jerusalem.
The Lord is full of surprises in his immense, incomparable wisdom. But three main lessons in conclusion. Therefore, first of all, see how the Lord directs all of these events for the fulfillment of his purposes. Well is it said, and rightly is it said, in the book of Proverbs chapter 21 and verse 1, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. As the rivers of water, he turns it wherever he will. In this instance, the heart of the princess, who was filled with sorrow for this crying little baby, was in the hand of the Lord. And he turned it in the direction that he wanted in order to preserve his chosen deliverer of Israel. We pray, let us be praying, that the Lord would be at work in people in the highest positions in our land to direct their hearts in a direction that will be glorifying to him. See then how the Lord directs all of these events for the fulfillment of his purposes. Secondly, see how this deliverance of his servant from danger foreshadows an even greater deliverance of an even greater servant of God. We read from Matthew 2 and verse 13. Do you see the parallel? Do you see the parallel order that Herod had given, parallel in many ways to the order that Pharaoh had given? And yet, God, this time through a more spectacular means, through the form of a dream, warns Joseph. Get up, he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt of all places. And escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. The Lord works in surprising ways. Here, Egypt becomes, in the providence of God, the place of safety and security for the Lord's chosen deliverer, a much greater deliverer than Moses was. And then finally, see also how this deliverance from great danger, it surely foreshadows an even greater deliverance from much greater danger that I trust that all of us here this evening have experienced. The kind of deliverance that is spoken about in 1 Thessalonians 1. Thessalonians are described in this way. You turn to God from idols to serve the living and true God, and to wait a son from heaven whom he raised from the dead, Jesus. Jesus, who delivers us from the coming wrath. And let's just think of a parallel here. What was Moses like in the circumstances in which he found himself? He was a helpless baby. He was a helpless baby. There was nothing that the baby could do to bring security to himself. He was a little baby lying in a basket at the mercy of whoever might come across him. A helpless baby, unable to save or deliver himself. But the Lord did it in his amazing providence. But think about this. As sinners, are we not utterly helpless sinners? Unable to do anything to deliver ourselves from the coming wrath and judgment of God. How wonderful. In the great mercy and purpose and plan of God, he sent Jesus, who delivers us from the coming wrath. So indeed, this deliverance from great danger in the case of Moses foreshadows that even greater deliverance from much greater danger that the Lord has brought about for all those who trust in Jesus.